is now doing a lot with a number of countries that are looking at new space ventures and activities. And I will give the floor to Jean-Jacques to carry on. And the one thing that is always very much appreciated by me individually is that Jean-Jacques doesn't rely on any slides and pretty pictures, but paints them in words. Thank you, Jean-Jacques.
No, thank you, Sahid, and thank you very much for inviting me every year to address the institute on topics that you select, Sahid, and just to make my life not boring, you every year you choose another title. So, and I am trying to respect what you are asking me to do. So, I am I like to be every year with you. Even though this year it's a little bit different because, as I told you, I am seeing you in two dimensions only, and I prefer to see the people in 3D than in 2D. However, in spite of these problems, and this is something that on which I shall come back several times during my address, yes, the world is crossing difficult times, but space during that difficult time has made progress enough for making what was the future last year already be the current this year. Because I am amazed by the number of progress and projects which have been achieved during that period from the beginning of this year. So, as a matter of fact, the space sector is changing quickly. The convergence of two different flows. The first one is the traditional top-down flow, driven by and fed by more and more governments in the world, which are using space for their defense and security, for discoveries and knowledge, and also for public services. So that it's the top-down flow which is there since decades. And the more recent flow, which is much more a bottom-up flow, driven by the business-as-usual interactions between customers, investors, and entrepreneurs. And these two flows are very different. They have different values. They are more strategic for the first one, the government one, more economic for the second one. They have different standards of cost, standards of time, because they have a very different culture of risk. The governments are much more risk-averse than private entrepreneurs. And but as in fluid mechanics, these two flows converge and mix, producing some turbulence and even sometimes some resistance. But there is no replacement of one flow by the other. On the contrary, there is a strong interaction and more interaction between each other, resulting in a reinforcement of each other through mutual benefits. And that is very clear. The more recent flow generated by new actors is taking benefit of the public market offered by the traditional actors and of the reservoir of technologies developed and de-risked by the traditional actors. So the new space is taking benefit of the traditional space. But in return, the traditional actors take benefit of the lower cost and the agility which is offered by the new actors. And that is illustrated the best by the interaction between NASA and SpaceX. SpaceX has developed on the basis of a guaranteed market of the International Space Station servicing, and the technologies developed by NASA. Without this market and without these technologies, SpaceX would not exist. And in terms of technologies, this is the Merlin engine and the tossback recovery of the first stage that has been developed by the DARPA and NASA. So that this is the benefits that SpaceX is drawing from the public sector. But in return, NASA has benefited of lower cost for ISS servicing and giving NASA more room to develop moon exploration. And that, again, SpaceX would not exist without NASA, and NASA would have much more difficulties today without SpaceX. So why these new actors were coming to space? Just because these new actors, they have been attracted in the space sector by the value of data. And this economy of data has provided to space an economic dimension in addition to its traditional strategic dimension, increasing the value of space activities. And thus, the investments into space activities. It's amazing to see that the public investments in space have continued to grow while there were more and more private investments. For example, Monsieur Musk and Monsieur Bezos, they are investing in space, and at the same time, the yearly increase of budget of NASA is equal to the total budget of the French space agency, CNES. And that is a demonstration that there is no replacement, but much more a reinforcement of each by the other. So as a result of that, space is one of the few economic and industrial sectors which have not stopped during the COVID crisis, with a lot of events and achievements which have changed the picture of space compared to the beginning of the year. During that 9, 10 months, we have seen the deployment of many constellations of smaller satellites focused on applications, constellations for telecommunications, for extending the coverage and reducing the latency. There are now almost 1,000 satellites of Starlink in orbit, more than 100 satellites of OneWeb in orbit, and this constellation will continue to grow in orbit, but also constellation for Earth observation, for increasing the frequency of revisit, because the frequency of revisit has a fantastic value, and there are more than 100 satellites from planet. There is a Spire, there is ISAI, there is a lot of constellations of Earth observation too. In parallel to that, we had for the first time 3 missions going to Mars at the same time, using the same window to go to Mars. I would say the usual US one. The US, they are trying to use every window to go to Mars. But there is one from China and one from the Emirates, and that this is totally new. During this month also, we have seen that Hayabusa 2 and Osiris Rex are on their way back to planet Earth with samples of asteroids, which is also a fantastic step towards our knowledge of the solar system. For the first time in history, two NASA astronauts were launched on board the Crew Dragon to the International Space Station. And everybody has followed that live. And last demonstration was Demo 2, was successful enough to have next launch of Crew Dragon, which was due to be launched during these days. There is some delay, but clearly there will be an operational launch of Crew Dragon in the short term. And that it's also a totally game changer in the way human exploration are conducted. And during that month also, there are more and more startups which are flourishing in the US, in China, and in Europe. Just to limit to Europe, because this is what I know the most, there are more than 10 projects of new launchers. And there is two even in UK. And as I said many times, the startups, they've succeeded where I always failed, to have UK involved in launchers. There is new startups for developing constellations also, over observation, like Aerospace Lab or Prometheus. New instruments, new startups for developing instruments, and there is a camera developed by Satlantis, which is on board the space station right now and demonstrating fantastic performance. New startups also for equipment. I should mention Exotrel, and trust me. So there is a fantastic flow of startups which are which have appeared in the last months and few years in Europe. As usual, Europe was late. Why Europe is usually late? Because Europe is complex. I know that, having been in charge of ESA for some time, because the level of public investment in space is much lower than in the United States, because of the absence of the nouveau riche of Internet. So, yes, Europe was late in that development of startup, but Europe is catching up very quickly, I can tell you, as usual. Because we were late also in the 60s, after United States and USSR, and we have catched up. And that is certainly something important. And by the way, the role of startups is not in space only. This morning I was hearing the story of the vaccine against the COVID pandemic, and there is a lot of startups there also. Challenging the large corporation. So it's not unique to space. And that movement is very, very interesting because it increases the value of what we are doing in space. So I shall now focus on the two topics that Sahid asked me to address, applications and exploration. I would translate that into economy and dreams. So, applications. We are all dependent on data coming from space for many activities on planet Earth. Communicating, monitoring, localizing, weather forecasting, management of natural disasters, etc., etc. Meaning that there are more and more customers. And more customers, this is the start of a business as usual. because the customers, they are creating a demand and not anymore a push. And customers, they are also creating perspectives of revenues. Moving space towards just a business as usual. And transforming space from an economy of infrastructure, the offer, to an economy of data, the demand. To the point that there is more and more statistics on the space economy. So I have read that the space economy was worth $420 billion in 2019. But in these $420 billion in 2019, only 2% were coming from the launch services, and only 5% coming from satellites. Meaning that for more than 90% of that economy, of that value, is on ground. And it's around 45% for the ground systems and 45% for the services, meaning applications. So applications is the bulk of the space economy. And that value is five times the investment in space, because the investments in space are around $85 billion. Which is five times less than the total value of the economy. And the same statistics foresee a multiplication factor of 3 during the decade. So in 2030, that space economy should be worth at least $1.2 trillion. There are very few economies with that growth potential. And this economy, this is the value of data. I always quote Monsieur Gramegna, the Minister of Finance of Luxembourg, who said in a press conference that now the richest banks are not anymore the banks of money, but the banks of data. And when the Minister of Finance of Luxembourg is saying that, it's meaningful. So that this economic dimension is attracting more and more new actors in space. First of all, it has attracted the nouveau riche of Internet. They are all well-known, and even they are becoming the heroes of the space activities, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Yuri Milner. So obviously these nouveau riche of Internet, they are interested by space, which is good news. But they are also, as I said, among the new actors, the startups. And the startups, they are very interesting because they are zero-based, meaning that they start from zero. They are not starting from existing capacity, because for large corporations, the maintenance of existing capacity is sometimes the most important driver. While for the startup, they start from zero, meaning that they have no capacity to maintain. And they are ready to fail fast and learn fast. And that this is a characteristic of startups compared to large corporations. But obviously the large corporations, they could not stay still. They had to move in order to increase the value of what they are doing and increase their pace too. What about the value? I have said before that the value is not in space. The value is downstream. And this is the reason why the large corporations, they are trying to extend their activities downstream, either by the verticalization of their activities or by partnership. The large corporations, they are trying to partner with other actors along the value chain, reaching the end customers. And you have seen in the last few days NASA and Nokia partnering for developing telecommunications on the moon, SpaceX and Motorola partnering for distributing internet from Starlink, and so on and so on. Most of this partnership is focused on partnering between space actors and digital actors. And they are also trying, the large corporation, to increase their pace by creating their own startups to escape the rigidity of the large corporation. And that increase their pace and agility. So the large corporations are moving more and more. And this is good also for space. There are more actors, but speaking of applications, there are also more places on planet Earth where space can bring a quicker response than ground-based solutions. And that this is something new. The typical example of such place is the Arctic regions, which are empty of ground-based infrastructures. The Arctic regions, they have always had a strategic value. But now there is a perspective of economic value also of these regions, meaning that, especially for their natural resources or for the routing of goods, meaning that there is more and more attention given to the Arctic region from the three continents surrounding the Arctic regions. And space will play a unique role in the development and in the security of these regions. I shall close my address on the my remarks on applications by saying that we are dependent on space systems, and more dependent. A significant part of the economy now is dependent, is relying upon space systems all over the world. And that dependency on space systems raises the problem of protecting the space infrastructures against the threats, be it the presence of more and more debris in space due to cyber attacks. So I know I have read the program of your course, and I know that these two topics, debris and cyber attacks, are addressed lengthily in your course. But I would like to make just a few personal remarks. First, about the traffic management in space and the responsibilities associated to the traffic management. They are addressed in many fora. And obviously, as usual, the United States are at the forefront of the discussions and actions, because they have to resolve urgently concrete problems. Speaking of Starlink, United States, and there is a lot in the newspapers showing that there is some arguments in United States about the responsibility of the Starlink constellation. So the U.S., they have no choice but to address that problem of traffic management. But obviously, other regions are trying to play a role. And I know that the EU has tried in the UN circles with, I would say, little result to date. I know also that the UK has, supported by France and Germany, has also relaunched an initiative on good behavior. And, the news that I get are pretty positive on that. But I must say that, yes, we should not leave United States alone to rule the traffic management. And since I am an advisor of the European External Action Service, I have advised them to announce that Europe will deploy a constellation of 10,000 satellites in the next 5 years, and that is a guarantee to be accepted around the table of discussions. We shall see. The second topic is cybersecurity, which is being developed quickly, and by the way, it's not limited to space by far. And this is the reason why the connection between the space world and the digital world is so important. But I would like to make just one remark. The protection has its limits. And the security is, obviously, the security of space infrastructures is starting by the protection of the space infrastructure. But security can be also organized by diversity of solutions. Because if you have several space infrastructures for one service, you have more chance to have a secure service. And this is the reason why the defense sector is using more and more the commercial services. First of all, because they could be at lower cost, but also because it gives them an alternative to secure the availability of the services. So, let's move now from applications, meaning the economy, which is down to earth, to dreams. By the way, this link between economy and dreams is exactly the dynamics used by Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. They are linking the development of Starlink and humanity on Mars. They are linking Amazon and space tourism. So it's an interesting dynamics because it mixes in their activities. Again, business and dreams. And what they are looking at is to make us all astronauts. All astronauts in space. Because, you know that we are already all astronauts, but on planet Earth. Even if we are not aware of that. I am a strong believer in space tourism and human exploration. So, about exploration. As I said, with applications, we are looking down to Earth, while with exploration, we are looking up to the infinite and beyond. As was saying Buzz Lightyear, but you are too young to know Buzz Lightyear. So, exploration is obviously science and knowledge, but not only by far. Exploration is robotic, mostly robotic, but not only. Because the human dimension of exploration is the most important dimension of exploration, in my view, because it belongs to the history of humanity, which has a much longer heritage than the history of space. I have known a world without space. I have not known a world without humanity. So I think that human exploration is part of the history of humanity. And space is just an extension of the places that humans are eager to discover. For the time being, and that maybe you are not totally aware of that. For the time being, humans have not gone very far for very long in space. Not very far. Mostly in the suburbs of planet Earth. You are in space when you are at 100 kilometers from planet Earth. and 100 kilometers is next door. It's even when you are confined in Paris, you are authorized to move to 100 kilometers. So just to show that being at 100 kilometers from planet Earth, it's just next door. Most of the human missions in space are 400 kilometers on board space stations, in particular the International Space Station these days. But the International Space Station being only at 400 kilometers, this is much more a laboratory of international cooperation than an outpost in space. When the Columbus laboratory has been shipped from Bremen to Florida, I was saying in my speech that it was the longest trip of the Columbus laboratory because it was a couple of thousands of kilometers compared to the 400 kilometers where Columbus will be attached on board the space station. And there is only 8 Apollo missions. There were only 8 Apollo missions to the moon, meaning only 24 all men in total going beyond 400 kilometers. So, as you can see, we have not gone very far, but not for very long, too. Just a couple of months in low Earth observation, in low Earth orbit, and just a couple of hours on the moon. So this is very far from the standards of human exploration that we have inherited from our ancestors. And why that? Why that? Why human exploration so far is not far and not for very long? For 3 reasons. First of all, no sense of urgency, except when it was the race between USA and the USSR in the 60s. But that race is over. It's over since very long. So there is no sense of urgency. The solar system is still there for a couple of billions of years, and will certainly survive humanity. So, does not make human exploration urgent. The second reason is much more physical. Planet Earth is the worst starting point for exploring space, because the gravitation is high, much higher than from the Moon, from Mars, from the asteroids. And we have planet Earth as a thick atmosphere. And because of that, it costs the same energy to go from 0 to 200 kilometers from planet Earth than to go from 200 kilometers to infinity. And that is a constraint. And the third reason is that we continue to bring every kilogram of hardware and every liter of liquid from planet Earth for the entire duration of the mission, while every explorer on planet Earth uses in situ resources, and we are not doing that. So we cannot continue to explore space in these conditions. By the way, not only with humans but also with robots, because the consequence of what I have said are a strong limitation of distance, a long time before reaching a distant target. And the best example are the windows to go to Mars. We cannot go to Mars today with the constraints that I mentioned, for more than a couple of weeks every 26 months. How can we imagine to explore Mars with this type of constraint? We should try to go to Mars every day of the year, not only a couple of weeks every 26 months. The same with the Rosetta mission. I always said that it took 10 years for Rosetta to reach the comet. And as I said in my speech when we met the comet with Rosetta, it took 10 years to develop Rosetta, 10 years to go to the comet, and if I count the couple of years to make the decision by member states, it's almost 25 years before the idea of the scientist and the first data, meaning that the best quality of a scientist is to be in good health, to survive 25 years to get the data he was looking for. So we cannot continue like that. So the easier part of the constraints that I was mentioning is to use the in-situ resources for producing fuel, for producing energy, for producing life support. And it looked fiction for long. It was only in movies that we were using space resources and making potatoes on Mars. But there are more and more initiatives now which are developed on the subject. First in the US, as usual, but then in Europe, in the Emirates, which have established a legal, financial, and research frameworks to attract entrepreneurs and investors on that subject. But also initiatives from startups and then from traditional actors like NASA, which has extended to moon exploration the model used for ISS servicing, as well as ESA, by the way, was an in-situ resource utilization initiative. And supporting the initiative of Luxembourg, and I take the opportunity to say that the ESRIC, the European Resource Space Resource and Innovation Center, will be opened in Luxembourg on the 18th of November. So, the moon exploration today is not anymore the repetition of the Apollo program 50 years later. First of all, because we are promised to have a woman on the moon, which is good in 2024, but also because it's a cooperative endeavor. While during the Apollo program, it was a race to be the first to put a flag on the moon. Today, it's a cooperative endeavor between countries, between public and private sector, between the startups and the large corporations, between space and resource industry. So it's a cooperative endeavor with much more many actors looking at moon exploration. And there is more and more projects now to use the lunar resources to the point that there will be a lunar gateway as an intermediate step between planet Earth and the Moon as a hub, and you have seen that there is much more water on the Moon, and I am sure that this information about the water on the Moon is not so much related to knowledge, but related to the perspective of using this water on the Moon. Obviously, what has not changed is the leadership of the U.S., having proposed the Artemis framework for moon exploration. And they have proposed that agreement. To date, 7 countries have signed this agreement, among which the usual friends of the U.S., Japan, Canada, and Italy, which are 3 partners of the space station, U.K. and Australia, and also Luxembourg and the Emirates, both being developing initiatives on space resources. So this Artemis agreement is defining a legal framework for moon exploration and celestial objects. which they claim consistent with the International Treaty of Outer Space. But I shall not argue about that because I am far from being an expert. But I would like to repeat that apart from these legal discussions, we cannot ignore anymore that space resources will change totally the way we are conducting missions in space, which will be a giant leap for space activities. But even more important, the use of space resources for space missions in a first step will have a much more important consequence, because it will break the finite character of planet Earth. And that will be a giant leap for humanity. And this is the reason why I think that exploration is, again, exploration of space is a laboratory to see how we can live together on planet Earth, and on a planet Earth which is today a finite spacecraft, and space resources will open that finite character, and that is important enough to make sure that the lawyers will find a way to do that. So this is what I wanted to share with you, but obviously I am ready to take a couple of questions if you have any. Thank you.
As always, absolutely brilliant. Thank you, Jean-Jacques. I hadn't thought about one of the requirements of being a space scientist, that you should have good health and be quite young.
That's right. Because of the... And on Rosetta, it was typical. It was almost 25 years between the requirement from the scientist and the first delivery of data. And that is, again, that it's a fact. It's not just communication. So we should try, by the way, and I take that opportunity to say that I am trying to redesign these missions, the Mars Express mission, the Herschel mission, and the Rosetta mission, which have been very successful ESA missions. But I am doing that with the University of Luxembourg and the Luxembourg Space Agency. And by the way, the three project managers of ESA who are retired like me. But we have started the redesign of these missions under the assumption that space resources would have been available. And what I would like to show, it's a concrete case, it's not a business case, it's not, it's reality. If we had access, have had access to space resources, how we would have designed these three missions differently. And I hope that we shall demonstrate that we could go to the comet much quicker.
And that's primarily because you don't need to carry so much into space from the Earth and with constraints of the Earth.
Yes, because we have used gravity kicks. I think that there were three gravity kicks and so on. So the trajectory of Rosetta has nothing to do to go directly to the comet, but to try and get up speed to catch the comet.
I'm wondering, I know that another person who spent a lot of his time at ESA is with us. I wonder if David might have some comments to share with Jean-Jacques, and also Martin. I think Martin is still with us.
And there's a question, if I may interject. First of all, thank you from me personally as well for this excellent presentation and overview. So the question is the EU currently facing challenges to have a say when it comes to space traffic management as compared to the US?
As I said, and again, myself, I am just connected with the European Election Service, one of the services of the EU, and I know that they, 2 or 3 years ago, they have taken an initiative to address that problem in the UN framework, and they have worked a lot. And unfortunately, they did not succeed to be an active member of that discussion. And again, the US, they are going their own way, which is okay because they have a concrete problem, as I said, to solve. So it's not I am not challenging United States. They better do that. So but this is true that for the time being, it was not yet the EU has not yet succeeded to have a voice strong enough. But again, as I have understood, and that has been mentioned by the European External Action Service, I have understood that there were more recently an initiative from UK and supported by France and Germany to reduce the ambition of the discussion to good behavior. And I have understood that initiative was much more close to be translated into a resolution, that there were only a few countries against, but much more countries ready to vote such a resolution. But I have not got the final result. But this is true that the EU. But just because the EU is not the biggest provider of the traffic in space. The two big providers of the traffic in space are by far United States and China. And obviously when you are, and this is the reason why I said we have to announce that the EU will put a constellation of 10,000 satellites in orbit. And today we are credible on that. I am sure that we would have a seat around the table, because if let's say the ones who are feeding the traffic should be the ones to find proper traffic management. And, but we need that. We need that. We cannot continue without traffic management rules associated to traffic management, there is a story of responsibilities, and the story of responsibilities goes to the story of insurance. And by the way, this is exactly the traffic on the roads, the traffic in air, the maritime traffic has been addressed. So I think that space could learn a lot also from the air traffic management and the maritime traffic management, and I know that they are involved in the reflection and discussion. By the way, it's the FAA in United States, which is the central part of the action of the United States.
Thank you very much for this extensive answer. We have one question is about whether you get your watch in the background with the planets on it. And
it's ESA. ESA. It's one of my souvenirs of ESA, because I am I have kept some souvenir of ESA, and that being from ESA. But I don't know if it still exists. It was at my time, which is a long time ago.
Thank you very much. The comment was, it's an amazing one. So the next question on content is, you have mentioned collaboration during your session. How would you describe the collaboration between various space agencies, including ESA, UK Space Agency, NASA, etc.? Has this changed from time you were at ESA to now?
I cannot answer for today, but that cooperation, as I said many times to my counterpart of NASA, Russia, China, Japan, I always told them if there is one topic on which I can teach you, it's cooperation. Because cooperation is our daily work in Europe. At ESA, we don't know what is not cooperation. So, because ESA is per se a cooperative venture. So 22 member states, not easy, but it works. We are demonstrating, and when I say we, pardon, I am not anymore ESA. ESA is demonstrating every day that cooperation is working and is sustainable because, ESA is a fantastic example of cooperation. Cooperation among member states, but also cooperation between the public sector and industry because there is more and more partnership between ESA and industry and enterprise. So, so we know what means cooperation in Europe. We at ESA was, and at my time, and again, recently, ESA is cooperating a lot with international partners and with United States, obviously, which is since the early years of ESA, the most important partner of ESA, mostly for science and exploration, but also Russia, China, Japan. So ESA has a lot of international partners. And because we have the culture of cooperation at ESA, we are certainly in the world the most reliable partner of the world. ESA has never given up a cooperation with an international partner. While I have some examples where our partners have given up cooperation with ESA. So, but on the ESA side, ESA is the most reliable partner of the world, and there is more and more cooperation because with space we are addressing global problems, and global problems have global solutions, and this is the reason why the cooperation is important. Now, and I shall finish with that, cooperation should not be the only dynamics of space activities because the competition of ideas is also very important. And this is the reason why I always said that we should have cooperation of interest, the mutual benefits, but also the competition of ideas. Because the competition is very important to make sure that we have the best solution. So organizing cooperation and competition is very important. But there also, ESA is a fantastic example because the member states of ESA are cooperating, while the industry of the member states, they are in competition, at least in most of the projects of ESA. So it's a good mixture of cooperation and competition.
Yeah, thank you very much for this excellent answer. We have one more question, and that is a follow-up to your comment on the previously on space traffic management. And the question is the UN more persuasive in that sense? Looking at the role of UN Corpus,
the UN and especially the UN Corpus, they are doing their best. But I know what means making 20 countries working together. So making almost 200 countries working together, it's another dimension. So. So I have all respect with what is done, and again the forum of discussions are certainly important. But on the other hand, around the table there are member states which are more important than others, and especially United States and China, because in the traffic in space they are the two most significant contributors of that traffic. So, and as I am telling them, because I have still some connections with United States and China, I am telling them, you are the provider of the traffic, but you will be the two most important victims of that traffic. So you cannot just ignore the problem. You have to sit down and find a proper management. And as long as you are not doing that, all space activities in the world will be constrained by that. And that it's a pity, because if you are a believer in space, you must have a clean space. That this is important, because there will be more and more constraints if we are not solving that problem.
Thank you very much. Someone is typing. Side, do you have any comment or anything
to add? I was just going to ask Jean-Jacques to comment about, you were talking about the narrow window for missions from Earth to Mars, and leaving aside the possibility of having a station on the moon, from missions going from the Earth, is the growth in constellations, the sizes of the constellation, going to exacerbate that, and how important do you think that is?
But the constellation in low Earth orbit, or I have not quite taken your question, the relationship between going to Mars and the many constellations which are now already existing, but even more planned around the Earth. So I have not quite understood the relationship.
I'm wondering about the launch windows when you have more in low Earth orbit.
The launch windows to Mars are only related to the distance between planet Earth and Mars. This is if we miss that window, unfortunately, we have 26 months more to work. And by the way, unfortunately, this is the case of the ExoMars mission from OVISA. But what I am trying to do with the project managers of Mars Express, it's if we had access to space resources, could we go to Mars outside the window? Or the question is, can we increase the window by having access to space resources? I know that this is not the only solution, because there are other solutions, and especially the nuclear propulsion and so on. Because the key problem is to have propulsion as long as possible, and not just a big kick at to escape planet Earth and after to go to go to Mars. So that is the story of the window is just related to the shortest way to go to Mars. Now the constellations, I think that you can launch the constellations almost every day. By the way, the choice of the dates of the launch of the Starlink are not related to the constellation, but on the availability of SpaceX vehicles. So I think that there is no constraint window. There are some constraints, obviously, but the constraints are much less for low Earth orbit than to go to Mars.
Thank you very much. I received in the private chat the very lengthy questions. I tried to make it short because I am also aware that you have another meeting coming up. In short, there is a stronger reliance and dependency on space applications all over the world. Does this encourage more engagement between private and public sectors, looking at the economic benefits and private investment opportunities? And is this a potential that leads to a larger industry where quality control and financial drivers of investors might impact the future of space?
Okay, there are several aspects in that question, and I am afraid that I should try to be short. Let's say when you have the perspective of paying customers, which is the case when there are more and more customers using services based on space data, and this is communications again, Earth observation, localization, and so on and so on. When you have perspectives of customers, you have perspectives of revenues, and when you have perspectives of revenues, you have access to investors. With no perspective of revenue, you have no investors. So, and that this is the business as usual link. And because of this economic value of data, there is now more and more investors and more and more entrepreneurs. That is the demand. Obviously, connected to that, there is a decrease of the cost. And because of the miniaturization, because of the digitalization, because of standardization, I must say that now you must still to be rich to invest in space, but not that rich, because the level of investments have decreased. Let's say today you have OneWeb satellite of 150 kilo for less than $1 million. And to have satellites of 150 kilos for less than $1 million was not in the in the standards of space just 10 years ago. The same, you can launch this 150 kilo satellite on a rideshare launch for $500,000. Half of a million. And that is a totally different picture when you are developing new spacecraft. And this is the one of the interests of the current situation, is that decrease of cost and increase of the demand, you have more and more investors and more entrepreneurs. Now, these entrepreneurs, they are, as I said, using a lot of technologies which are coming from the public sector. And this is the reason why there is a strong synergy between the private side and the public side, which is good.
Thank you very much. I think Saïd wants to say a few words to close the session. Saïd?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Jean-Jacques. Great to see you. Hopefully we'll see you in London before too.
Yes, I hope so. I hope so, and David too, because you owe me a dinner now. I'll go to London as quickly as possible to have a dinner with you, David, and other friends.
Great. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. It was very insightful. And please feel free to join again later today.
Okay, thank you very much. Now I have to rush to another meeting. I shall see if I am coming back.
Okay, bye for now. Well, we can.